Welcome to Around the Wheel. This is the very, very first podcast of this type. Today, John DiCarlo is my guest. We're going to talk about continuing the journey of learning and some of the challenges that riders go through in other disciplines as well. Turns out John DiCarlo has been a fine instructor for 30 years. He's back into adventure riding. He's been back for about 5 years. But like so many of us in this field, he took a 15-year hiatus and rode for about 14 years before that. So we're not going to ask John how old he is because that's a lot of math. If anybody's watched any of my recent videos, you know that's not my strong suit. John isn't just a Patreon supporter. John came out to Washington State from the East Coast and participated in my training hands-on. So he's a customer, a student, and now a friend and a huge supporter. John, let's talk about continuing the journey of learning for motorcycling.
Hi, Brett. How are you? So I was always intrigued with learning as an adult. You know, I've been learning all my life. I teach in college, tried to learn new skills all my life, whether they are horseback riding, whether they're riding motorcycles, flying aircraft, scuba diving, jumping out of airplanes. And each one of those has taken me on a journey. And I thought when I started adventure riding that it would be really neat to take it to the next step, to learn and to put my cognitive skills to the test and go to a professional and finally take something like a very physical thing and use it to learn and engage in a process. And that's why I came out to Washington. And boy, I have to tell you something, and an unintended plug, and Brett doesn't know anything about this, but boy, if you do this, will you learn? Your team and you were just incredible. I think that I learned more in the days that I was with you about riding motorcycles than I have ever learned in my entire life. And that says a lot because, I did ride a lot of years, and the learning and the cognition that took place in those few days, because it was so directed and well thought out, was like an encapsulation of everything that I needed to know. I don't know it all, but everything that I needed to know about getting not only through an adventure, but really enjoying that adventure and taking it to the next step. And thank you so much to you and your team for that.
When I'm thinking about continuing learning, and I do courses all the time. Every year I do some course, and the longer I've been in this, the longer it takes, or the more effort it takes for me to find something that I haven't already taken. You know, I've done road racing courses and rally racing courses, off-road courses. I'm always looking for something different and something new. In this vein of continuing the journey of learning and what you just mentioned about coming out and doing things hands-on, every single time I read a book that somebody's written and then taken a course with them, often the book has more content than what I get in the class. But being face to face with somebody and having them explain what they actually meant, because what I interpret from those words and what they're really meaning is so often so different. And the other element of this comes across with the videos. And I love that people watch the videos I produce. I get comments and emails, and I meet people in person and they say, thank you. You know, this has made such a difference. But the difference between watching a video, reading a book, and having somebody with a trained eye watch you and coach the specifics of your development and the things that you need to work on. And let's face it, John, you're not abnormal in the world of adventure riding. This is not a young man's sport in general. These are guys 40s on the low end and close to 70s on the high end. And that's just the edges of the bell curve. It makes a difference for sure.
It does. And there are so many elements to adventure riding. And I think that as we age, especially, we're not only dealing with learning skills, but we're learning to deal with fear very often. Because as we age, when we go over the handlebars, there's a lot more chance that we're going to bust ourselves up a little bit. And obviously, close to 70, it takes a little longer to heal. And I wanted to ask you, I found that very often when I'm on the road or coming into a situation where I'm not sure of myself, some fear takes over and it slows me down and makes me perform less efficiently. And I was wondering, how do you deal with that, Brett? I mean, how do you deal with fear and how it affects your efficiency?
I'm glad you asked that question because fear is such a critical element in this adventure riding. If you think about the sand, the rocks, the gravel, the tall bikes, the weight, all of these things, we're scared. We don't want to crash. We don't want to break things. We don't want to break ourselves. And I think the first thing that every rider needs to come to grips with is that fear is not a bad thing. It keeps us alive. Fear is what keeps us from doing really stupid things that we shouldn't be doing. The issue is uncontrolled fear. When fear controls your actions, when it stops you from doing what you need to do, that's when fear becomes something of an advantage or something that will keep you alive to something that will actually cause you to end up in harm's way. It's interesting when I'm training riders, because I've done women-only camps and worked with older riders and younger riders and military, and there's a difference between often when you look at men and women and the way they learn in general when they're in the field with me. Women are far more aware of their mortality. They're less likely to just go out and do stupid things. Where guys, I can pretty much point at a hill and I say, John, that hill, blah, 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 throttle, blah, 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 because that's all you hear. And in reality, I'm saying, John, there's a big hill there. You know, I don't want you to have too much throttle on the hill. We need to come at the bottom of the hill, manage that throttle at the bottom so you get your momentum. And then as you get up the top, twist off the throttle just a little bit so we don't spin the tire. And you just hear, here, blah, blah, throttle, blah, 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 throttle, blah, 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 throttle at the top. Okay. And off you go. And, you know, when I run up there and I pick you up and I pick up the bike, and then the next time I give you information, then you remember a few more pieces. So men, the issue is that sometimes we push through that fear blindly, and that becomes an issue. With women and some other riders, because I say that generally, but there are obviously learning styles cross genders, but there are patterns that we look for here, is that women are much more likely to hear all of the details and do exactly what I say. They hear everything I say, and they will go step by step. They are often the best learners when it comes to following direction. But because that mortality is so evident to them, they are likely to make the errors on the other side. Fear takes over and they're not able to do what they need to do to stay safe. Here's the question that you really asked me. How do we overcome that fear? Obviously, this is a different path for riders. For me, one is repetition and familiarity. The more you do something, the more comfortable you become with it. Don't run up and jump over a cliff. You want to just ease up to the edge. If you're scared of going fast in sand, don't just go, okay, Brett said go fast, twist the throttle, close your eyes and go. That's not going to work. But you do need to go a little faster than you were going. And then each time you become more comfortable, you start understanding how things work. That helps control that fear threshold so that you don't pass that point where the fear takes over your control. The other thing you can do is to cross over and develop your fear control in environments that are truly not hazardous. As long as you make the cognitive connection between the training that you're doing to control fear and the motorcycle, where that fear is really trying to keep you alive, it crosses over very well. And I know I'm chatting for quite a while here, but I get really excited when we talk about this because it's such a critical element for riders. Mm-hmm. One of the things that many people I'm sure don't know about me is that I'm not very fond of heights. And I'm sure there's a lot of riders out there that can relate. So one of the ways I learned to control my fear and to make sure that I can stay in a state of cognition where I'm thinking through my processes is I go do high ropes courses. I'll go to Alaska and they have these grates under the tall high-rise bridges, and I'll cross these open graded areas across these bridges. And it forces me to not become stuck, because I want to make sure that even in that heightened state of fear, I still have complete control of my judgment and my actions.
It's interesting that you said that repetition, that practice, is one of the important things to overcoming fear. Of course, you know, we know both as professional educators, and I don't know how many people are really aware of this, but there's this thing called Bloom's taxonomy. So when we're learning stuff, you know, there's the laws of learning, and one of them, and a very important one, is repetition. And I never really thought of it, and you kind of opened my eyes to something here that I might use with my own students, in that repetition is very important in negating fear. And obviously, one of the things when I teach people to fly is that fear. And another thing, you know, coming down and it's like, am I going to do this right? And what happens if I screw it up? I'm going to crash. Another thing that really affects people when they're learning a complex new activity, and I have to tell you, after riding over my first baby head rocks, that is a complex activity, is a cognitive overload. And I know at one point I became so overloaded that I decided that I didn't really have to hold onto the bike. And I look like that picture of Rolly hanging onto the bike on my stomach at one point. So cognitive overload takes place. You know, when I'm teaching people to land, for instance, in the aircraft, very often I'll ask them, hey, could you tell me what, you know, 4 times 4 is? And they're unable to do even simple math, and or they're able to not recall their phone number or something like that. What happens to us, Brett, on a motorcycle, especially when we are trying to learn a complex task like controlling a clutch, you know, getting both our feet to work different controls and our right hand working two different controls simultaneously? How do we do all that and not become cognitively overloaded?
Well, when we come back to the repetition thing, it's important to recognize that people say, you know, well, I practice all the time, therefore I'm going to be perfect. Practice does not mean perfect. Practice just makes habits. And it's those habits that help us overcome the fear. Because if you break it down to going, okay, what's going on? Why do we have that fear? It all comes back that we have a sense of lack of control. We're overwhelmed, right? I don't feel like I have control in the sand, therefore I'm fear of it. If I'm in the plane and I'm not sure if I can land it, I don't feel like I have control, then that fear steps in. What we end up doing is going, how do we train ourselves so that we feel that we have more control? What we have to do is we need more brain power free to deal with the things that are coming at us. And the more you can create muscle memory of different actions where you can have better prediction. This comes back to, I get riders who will come to me and say, you know, Brett, I want to come to you. I want to train. I think I'm a pretty good rider, but I can't keep up with any of my buddies. And I want to be able to ride faster and keep up with my buddies. I'll get to talking to them or I'll work with them. And I have to explain to them very quickly that, hey, you're never going to ride as fast because you can't see anything, right? If you can't see, you can only ride as fast as you can see information and process that information. Now, one of the ways that repetition going through the sand and the rock is creating a data bank of knowledge so that your mind can process through an accurate prediction of what's about to happen. You talked about the baby head rocks, you know, these boulders that don't lock in and they roll all over and you get on it and the bike's kicking in all directions and you're being knocked all over the place. And the first time you roll into it, you have no idea what's going to happen other than the fact you just watched two riders in front of you fall down, which doesn't help, you know. And then once you get in there and it kicks around, you go, wow, okay, that was pretty challenging. The more you ride through it, the more often you ride through it, the better you can see that rock and recognize, oh, the baby heads over there, because the way they're laying, are going to act differently than the baby head rock over here that's been chewed up. And it's having that ability to identify accurately, quickly, and process it so that you're no longer tied up. Your mind isn't just so focused on trying to figure that out that now you can look beyond those baby heads and you can see the hill on the other side. You can identify other things that are occurring to the bike. You can, you know, notice that the weather's changing or that there's something in the middle of the baby heads that weren't there because you're so focused on what's in front of you. That repetition creates muscle memory that frees up the mind so that you have more time to work through things so you don't feel like you're out of control. And when you don't feel like you're out of control, you help conquer fear.
You're telling me then that I once read a book by a guy named Malcolm Gladwell, and the book was called Blink. I think it was his first book, actually. And he talked in it about people analyzing stuff without really going up to a cognitive level. They weren't analyzing it going, let me see now, this is this way and this is this way, but they were doing it in the blink of an eye, literally, and that's hence the name of the book. And so what you're telling me then, I'm getting, is that a lot of things that we do when we're doing a complex task don't really rise to the level of conscious thought, but it comes to what you're calling muscle memory or an analytical skill that happens more on a visceral level?
Well, what I'm saying is that when you first do anything new, we're working our process through. I train brand new riders. And when I'm teaching them, they look at their hands. They look at their hand when they twist the throttle. They look at their hand when they squeeze the clutch. And I get instructors who early on, stop looking at your hands. Don't look at your throttle. We ride with our eyes up. Guys, back off a bit. Right? When we first start learning, we look at our hands. We look at our feet. We look at the ground directly in front of the tire. That's part of the process. Now, if they continue to do that long term, we have an issue. But as they do it more, as they understand what the feel and the feedback is and what happens, they stop looking at their hands. They stop thinking about what they're doing. The first time I go to turn the throttle and I'm thinking, I have to twist the throttle and then it's going to make noise. And then when I let this lever over here on the left out, the bike's going to go somewhere. Oh, wait, it didn't go somewhere. What happened? Oh, wait, I'm supposed to hit the shifter. Okay, it's down. Okay, so I push down and then I make the noise with the right hand. And then I let this lever out and then it starts to go. Oh, and I'm supposed to be looking in front of me when I do this. And it's just overwhelming. And yes, they're physical skills eventually, but they start off as a cognitive skill because you don't know what's happening yet. Again, this repetition, this practice helps turn these things that take a lot of cognitive ability and release that ability later because now it's a habit, it's a process, it's just muscle memory. That's one of the ways we get away from that to free up that extra space. There's a book, Upper Half of the Motorcycle, Man and Machine. One of the statements in there was talking about, it talks a lot about the mental reasons why we do things, what limits us. And one of those is talking about lean angle. And the natural lean angle for a human is around 20 degrees. If you're out in nature running around, after about 20 degrees, you fall down. We have a little alarm that goes off in our head that says, hey, you're going to fall down if you keep doing this. The first time you ride a motorcycle and you lean past 20 degrees, that alarm starts going off going, hey, you got a problem. This is an issue. That's fear. But over time, training allows you to recognize that, oh, I can lean at 30 degrees, 40 degrees, 50 degrees. And if you're a racer, even more. These things are supposed to keep us alive. You know, this thing says, look, if you lean too far, this is going to happen. If you look a mile down the road, that's not a problem. I'm worried about the thing that's going to eat me that's 100 yards out. But as motorcyclists, we have to train to look farther out. We have to train to lean farther, and we have to overcome those fears. And once we do that, we can move on to a new fear because we're always going to have something. We all have a threshold. No matter, Rossi has a threshold. It's way past mine. And I have thresholds off-road that are way past yours. And sometimes we'll pass them because there's things like talent. And other times it's repetition, it may be exposure. There's a lot of different reasons why this comes into play. But fear is just, it is one of those things that will keep us alive, that will drive us forward in a lot of ways. It's probably why we ride. I mean, how fun would motorcycling be if there was no thrill to it?
Exactly, exactly. You know, another law of learning, of course, is intensity. And I think that the intensity of the situation when I was learning with you recently was one of the reasons why I think that I was able to take away so much, because it was not only repetition, but it was intense and it was so many other things. So you mentioned when you were just describing someone's ability, learning ability, looking at their hands, and then, oh, also, I've got to look in front of me. And it immediately reminded me of flying again. You know, there's so many similarities between being in an airplane because you're not using controls like you do in a car and being on a motorcycle. One of the things that we try to develop is something called a scan. We're moving our eyes in a certain direction so that we could see the panel and be looking for other aircraft traffic. And how do you do that? Or what is the best way to handle where you're looking on a motorcycle? I mean, some people tell me you got to look far away. And other people tell me, nah, not so much.
This is one of the reasons, John, I was so happy to do the first episode of this with you. Because flying, the association of flying to motorcycling has a lot of similarities. A lot of the techniques I teach for vision, especially to my road riders and my military guys, comes from flying, and more specifically, helicopter pilots. See, helicopter pilots have a tendency to spend a lot more time close to the ground. Mm-hmm. And so they look at things like overlapping contours. They look at motion parallax for distance, and much like you in a fixed wing aircraft. And you do fixed wing, right?
Yes, I do.
fixed wing aircraft, a lot of these are known sizes, relational sizes. If you look out and you see two items that you know they're the same size, if one is smaller, you know it's farther away. There's color, there's clarity. All these things give you some idea, and you have a 3D field you're working on. You're looking above, you're looking below, you're looking beside. In the distance, you see a white light, but there's nothing there to tell you how far away that white light is. And right. Half the time, you can't tell if the white light is coming towards you, if it's going to the left or to the right, unless you can pick up something else, you know, red and greens to give some indication. Turns out for motorcycling, I use many of those very same techniques for predicting what's ahead of me, including motion parallax, including clarity and depth of detail, and even associated sizes, especially in night riding. And so we do carry over a lot of those. And what I think the best way I found recently to articulate this is when we talk about sight line, and for an aircraft, it doesn't work quite like this, but for a motorcyclist, what I tell people now is you need your vision to be beyond your sight line. What this means is that the average rider will look directly in front of them, down the trail or down the road, and they'll look for the vanishing point, or maybe they'll try to look a little bit farther through the curve. And when I'm going through a mountain and I'm on a dirt road, I'm going to look through where that dirt road goes. And if it appears to bank to the right, I'm going to continue to take my vision and look through the trees and through the woods all the way to my hard right. And I'm going to look for things like open space where there's light showing that there may be a road that's there. Or maybe I'll catch a glimpse of a road. And better yet, maybe a logging truck coming my direction. Mm-hmm. You know, that's way beyond me. This is like 90 degrees off of where I'm sitting. The idea of just stopping your sight line means you're always reacting to things. The only way you can get into a proactive state where you're taking actions for hazards or challenges that are ahead of you before it's a reactive state. And we have to look beyond the sight line. And definitely the same thing, like, again, many of these vision techniques come from flying. I love crossing disciplines to figure out, how do I become better as a motorcyclist? How do I make other people become better motorcyclists?
There is so many crossovers. There are parallels in so many of the things that we do in life. Something that I wanted to ask you, because this, you know, we're talking tonight about how do we become better riders? How do we learn new riding skills? You know, how do we continue on this lifelong journey of learning? I think that doing that on a motorcycle is extremely important and extremely satisfying, because you make yourself a safer rider, you make yourself a more competent rider. One of the things that I do is I commute into work on most days. And of course, with COVID, I haven't been doing much commuting. But one of the things that I do when I do ride to work is I keep a journal of mistakes that I make every day. And so every morning when I'm riding in and every morning when I'm riding back home, which is about 20 miles, I keep a journal of things that I shouldn't have done or didn't do that I should have done. And what parallels are there in, or not parallels so much as, what could we learn from our mistakes in riding?
We've chatted before our conversation here, and I mentioned, you know, Paul, who's the other instructor. Some people, if they've seen the videos, they may have seen him on a couple of the videos.
Paul, and a great writer.
Yeah, what a great guy. Yeah, not very politically correct, but that makes him really enjoyable. But Paul and I, we do the same thing constantly. We'll come up to each other, and if we've made an error, we've gone for a ride and just go, man, I fell down. Or, man, that was a really slick, muddy hill. And he goes, yeah, that was terrible. I'm like, what did I do wrong? And it wasn't like, oh man, I couldn't get up that hill. It was too much mud, too much rock. The question was, why didn't I get up the hill? What did I miss? What angle did I not look at? What about tires? What about tire placement? Was it enough approach speed? And if I'm in traffic, it's no different. It's the same thing. Anytime something happens that catches us off guard or that we didn't expect, the first question we always say is, what did I miss? What did I do wrong? Because if you're not self-reflective, you're not going to improve. And of course, let's admit it. Anybody that's listening to this podcast, anybody that watches the videos that I make, anybody that comes to me as a professional trainer is already outside of the norm. We're already people that are concerned about being better, about improving. We want to be there. So we are kind of in a skewed environment, but it is so critical for riders to do that. And if we could get the average rider, the average, you know, the general public to reflect on their actions and to look at what they've done rather than pointing fingers at other people, we would have a lot fewer accidents and a lot fewer fatalities out there, whether it's on the trail or on the road.
It's so true. And one of the, you know, there are levels to learning. And I think that as we pass through them in many of the endeavors we engage in life, we kind of reserve those, not for our hobbies so much, but for our jobs, you know, so we get better at our jobs, you know, so that like the first level of learning is remembering. And, you know, then you get it to understanding, applying, analyzing. And finally, you get to such a level that you are synthesizing, you know, you're able to put this, it's you. You know, on a motorcycle, you're synthesizing stuff so that as you are running into it, you're able to actually analyze around it and get it done, even if you don't know what's coming next based on your past experience. So what are the experiences that a rider who is learning or returning to or wanting to get better in ADV riding, what are the experiences that they should be looking for and trying to engage in on a regular basis?
Well, let me turn this back around to you because you are such an asset to me and to the listeners here because you and I have spent time together. What I'm most interested in is you came out to me, you've watched the videos beforehand and you came out to do training. If there was something that you could tell riders that are listening now and say, I came out and I did training and this is the golden nugget. This is what I took away that made me better. What would you offer to the listeners now?
Wow. I would say that my big takeaway from coming out and training with you was to become more confident. And that happened because I learned. And the more that you have in your tool bag, the more that you could apply. And what you don't know you don't have, you don't know. And what you did in training me was is you added stuff to my tool bag so that I can actually use it. You taught me not only how to anticipate things, not only ride through things, I should say, but how to anticipate what was going to happen next. Okay, here's a switchback. And you just mentioned, you know, look for that patch of light, look for that logging truck through any available means that are coming, that's coming down the other side of the road. Make sure you're staying to the right, even though it doesn't seem like the thing to do because there could be something coming in the other direction. Balance, you know, I'm a short rider. And you went over some techniques. You call them poser skills. You went over some
techniques. Because you look good when you do it. And you look a lot better than being pinned underneath your motorcycle.
Yes, yes. And, you know, really. You know, so it's this accumulation of things that you learn, just like when you're learning to fly, you know, you're getting better because of the knowledge that you're gaining and the experience that you are able to gain by using that knowledge. Because if you just go in blind and you're doing an experiment every time rather than training with someone, it's kind of a hit or miss thing. But when you are guided using guided learning, which you do, it's a completely different experience. And so I think that what I took away was the being able to be more anticipatory and being able to handle situations better when I didn't know how the situation would end, because you gave me those tools to do that.
Fantastic. This topic of continuing learning is one, again, that I think is already something that the listeners are sold into. But my thought, or at least my parting thoughts and suggestions is, and to you as well, is never stop. If you stop reading, if you stop looking for advice, if you stop listening to people, that's when we become dangerous. That's when things become static. We need to keep looking for those and listen to people, even if you're not sure if it's good advice, but always consider the source. Free advice is often worth less than you paid for it. You know? But, you know, I do think that it's something that's important. And the other thing I'm going to throw out there is that don't get so focused on motorcycling as being the only way to improve yourself as a motorcyclist. When I trained with the military, and I trained military riders, and many of them, I trained them on civilian bikes. My goal was, I was basically a stop-loss program. That was my primary training for the military. I've done off-road, I've done some tactical stuff, but most of my stuff was just teaching riders not to kill themselves on their own bikes and how to change the culture of riding, how people think. What I had to do was go, what do these soldiers already do? What have they already been trained in that I can convert? You know, you being a former law enforcement, I know you were a police chief for some part of your life in a past life. And these guys, they're used to going into situations where they have to be aware of everything around them. They can't just hyper-focus direct in front of them, or else they're going to get killed, or somebody else is going to be killed. So they have to be very good about opening their vision up and becoming comfortable without having the detailed vision directly in front of them. And if I can tie in those built-in lessons to riding, the way you use the vision during riding, it came across very, very quickly. When I talk about a risk analysis and how when you ride, how you quickly assess what the risks are on the road and the process through, and what are the outcomes of your decisions, they do this every single time they have a mission. Every time, whether it's a combat mission or whether it's just something less intense, they go through the same process. So anytime I can bring that in, that's a benefit to them. Look for things that will help you with fear. We talked about fear earlier, and I mentioned I use high ropes. The other thing I did was I tried snowboarding. Turns out I skied when I was young, but I did not snowboard. And I took up snowboarding so that I would learn to control fear, that I would maintain action even when we have terrible snow out here. It rains and it turns to ice. It's terrible. But I would get up on these cliffs, these ice-laden cliffs, and strap a piece of plywood to my feet and then launch myself over the cliff. Believe me, my brain is telling me, this is a really bad idea, Brett. Don't do this. Well, it turns out I received instant feedback every time I let fear overtake what I knew I was supposed to do. As I go down, much like motorcycling, when I turn, I have to keep my eyes up and look where I'm going. If I look down, I became a snowball instantly. I knew that when I rode through the snow, I had to stay totally relaxed. I had to allow my feet. I needed to let the board flow over the snow, and I had to sit above it and basically float above the bike. I talk about the concept of a weightless rider. Well, turns out snowboarding is the same. And if I became stiff, I was an instant snowball. And this was a repetitive theme, that if I allowed my fear to take over what I knew I had to do, if I hesitated in turning the board, instead of turning the board to go down the hill in the other direction, I would end up at a snowball on one side of the hill. So I look for things that allow me to better my skills as a motorcyclist. So I encourage yourself and all the listeners that are listening to this podcast to continue your learning, but don't stop at motorcycling. Read books, read about adult learning theories, you know, so you know how to learn better and be more effective as a learner, not just an educator. Read books on road racing, even though you're an off-road guy. Read about off-road bikes, even if you're riding on road. That's how I got into off-road. I wanted to be a better road rider. You know, so I got into road racing. And then I got into dirt biking, but it was all to become the best street rider. That's the path I took. So that's my suggestions and my advice to all those that are listening to this podcast. And with that, I'm trying to keep things in a reasonable period of time for these. And this is our first one, so people can let us know. If you would have liked to had us talk for a longer period of time, please leave comments and let us know that. If you like the topics and you like the direction we're going, please let us know, because this is a resource for you as the listener. It's a resource for John today to chat with me. And although I see John more as a professional trainer with just a load of experience and knowledge, and I now reach out to John as a resource on a regular basis. But I want to do what's best, and I want to help people out. And I also want to thank you, John, for the time that you took this evening to chat with me and to share your thoughts and your knowledge and your experience. I think this was a great start.
Thank you so much for having me, Brett. And I'd like to wish you, as well as your other patrons, I'm sure, the best of luck with your new endeavor and the new video series on YouTube. I think it's so far done great work in the past. What we're seeing now is so much better, so much more personal and focused that I think that we are all in for a treat in the coming years.
I'm really excited as well. I've had great feedback from it, and the ability to be free for content, to put anything out that the viewers are interested in, everything from chain maintenance to travel tips to packing tips. I mean, it's just such a wide array of content and information that can be shared here. And then, you know, the response from people, I just recently started the Patreon account. People have jumped on that very quickly to support that. And I really do want to follow the content that people want. I don't want to chase the algorithms to try to recover the cost of doing all of these videos and all of these podcasts. I have a real job and it's more than full time. I'm a professional trainer, as many probably know by now, but there is definitely real cost to all of this. And I'm just excited to keep reaching out to people who may never have the opportunity or ability to come to me. So again, thank you for the evening.
Thank you.
And thank you for everybody that's listening. This was our very first Around the Wheel with Brett Tax, and tonight with John DiCarlo.